Have you ever been curious about astral projection? Did you ever consider the idea of time traveling while dreaming? Tonight's guest shares a fascinating story of how she does both. Welcome to the Peep Podcast. I'm your host, Nicole Maroc, and on this episode, you'll meet Melina Mortensen, author of the book Dreamland, The Story of an Earth Angel. Melina is the manager at Quantum Life, a store in Cary, North Carolina, that offers personal empowerment tools for living an inspired life. But more than that, she's a beautiful soul whose dreams may be affecting other people's realities. I admit it sounds a little bit out there, so I ask you to listen to this interview with an open heart and an opened mind. Let's dive in with Melina. Hi, Melina. Thanks for joining me today to talk about your book, Dreamland, The Story of an Earth Angel, and the life experiences that led you to write it. How are you doing?
I'm doing fantastic, Nicole. Thank you so much for inviting me to be on your podcast.
I'm really excited to have you here. And I always start with my interviewees asking what got you started. And your story is a bit different than most people's story as far as what got them into the paranormal. So without giving too much of the book away, could you share a little bit about your childhood and what nighttime in particular was like for you?
Okay, I'd be happy to. Childhood was rather rough for me, as I describe in the book, especially the nighttime hours. And this started at a very early age. My earliest memories go back to 2 years old. And I describe in a chapter called Worms, what it felt like me on a physical level. And basically what I was feeling at that time was my spirit wanting to come up out of my body as I was a little girl drifting off to sleep, and it would feel like little electrical tinglings all over my body, which I thought as a two-year-old were worms. So those are my earliest memories. And then as the years progressed, it just became almost impossible to sleep. And that started as early as first, second grade. I would do anything I could to stay awake, and I would hide from my family, of course, pretend that I would go to bed when I really would not, because I didn't want them to know how terrified I was. In addition to that, before being sent to bed, I would spend usually 30 minutes to an hour just pleading with a family member to please allow me to sleep in their bed with them. And of course, just being a regular family, they thought it was just nightmares. And she's just a kid and she's just scared to go to bed, or she's just afraid of the dark, not knowing what I was doing when I went to sleep.
So back then when you went to sleep, did it feel like nightmares, or like what was it that made you so afraid to go to sleep?
It did feel like nightmares, but the fear came from the vividness that it was, where we can wake up the next day typically as a human and say, I had this really weird dream, or I had this nightmare and there was this man or this, you know, creature or whatever. These were much more specific, much more vivid, as if I was there. So I could see details of furniture, homes, what the carpet color looked like, what the man was wearing, thoughts that they were having. I could hear them speak to me, even though they wouldn't be moving their lips. Mm-hmm. And then I got to a point where I would just completely block it out So then I would have no recall. I just had the fear. I think I just got so powerful at shutting it down in my point of view, it was survival instinct. I was petrified. And so in order for me to try to have a semblance of normal life, I just would start blocking it out. But of course, from time to time, yes, there would be recall.
And as you were growing older through childhood and teenage years, how did not sleeping at night affect you?
My health started to wear down. I was chronically sick due to not having adequate rest. I would sleep a lot during class. I got a reputation for that, as a matter of fact. And some teachers would get frustrated and think that I was, sloughing off being a decent student. And other teachers just had a feeling that they knew something was going on. They didn't know what it was. And no one ever really verbally asked me, is there something going on at home? What's going on that you sleep every day in here? I would just really kind of get away with it. And I think that one of the reasons was because my grades were always good. Mm-hmm. Somehow or another, I always still managed to do my homework and pass my test. I was an A, B, C student. I wasn't straight A's or anything, but I was able to maintain my grades enough to keep the questions at bay.
Yeah. That makes a huge difference when you're a kid. If the report cards come back without a whole lot of red ink on it or notes saying, please see us soon. A lot of times you can get away with things. I would sleep in class as a high schooler just because I would pull all-nighters to get my homework done at the very last minute. But I was a straight A student, so my teachers usually didn't really say anything to me. So I can relate to that on a certain level. Different reasons for staying up all night, but
Then like I did say in the book as well, I went to high school in the late 70s, early 80s, and alcohol and recreational drugs did become a part of my life. It was a coping mechanism for me. It kept my abilities during the day as well down to a bare minimum, so that I was able to socialize with other students and not feel so separate.
Yeah. And when you talk about your abilities during the day, is it intuition? Is it telepathy? Is it clairvoyance? Like what were those?
It was a certain sensitivity. It's kind of the metaphor that comes to mind for me is like when you have a stereo on full blast. I would feel when I was approaching the front of the high school and the bell was ringing, or even middle school, just like everything was on stereo for me. All the conversations, even if the groups were 20 feet away and talking privately, it's like I could almost hear what they were saying. It would come in little echoes. And I would know who they're gossiping about, what was going on in their discussions with those groups. And so it was just a huge wave of energy that would just overtake me on a physical level. I would often feel faint. It would happen to me at concerts. We would go to concerts when I was in high school and I would pass out.
Wow.
It was, the energy was just too much for, an empath to handle. And I'm what you call a high functioning empath. And there is a little bit of, just to clarify, there are a lot of empaths around the planet and I love that, but there are some of us that just do function on a little bit higher level. And so the energies can affect us so much that we can't handle it. And so I would faint from time to time or get so lightheaded I would have to go to the bathroom and sit down in there in order not to pass out.
Wow. That I can imagine that would make you feel very different from everybody else.
Oh yes, it was glaring, sense of separation and just trying desperately to belong and analyze my fellow students, my teachers, just any kind of situation that I was in. I was constantly trying to get the energy to balance out so that I could be a part of the group that I was in.
So moving from high school into adulthood, how did you make that change? Did you go to college? Did you get married? Like what was your early adulthood like?
My early adulthood, I did get married. I married the best friend of my older brother. I met him when I was 15 and we were married when I was 21, I believe. And just a couple of months after we were married, in Houston, he got a letter from Texas A&M saying he had been accepted to the engineering program. And so we as a couple decided that that was the best route for us moving forward, was to get some education behind us to afford us a better life. So we packed up the car and moved to College Station. And we're there, I guess, about a year. And after about a year, I decided that I wanted to go to school as well. So early adulthood was married in college.
And were you still having the dreams at night, or were you even sleeping at night through those years?
I was still having the dreams at night. We would sometimes have to sleep in separate rooms because if it wasn't an especially active night, the nightlight wasn't enough for me. So I would have to get up and go to the guest room and sleep with the main light on, the main light switch on. And so in order for him to get some sleep, I would have to go to another room. So yes, they were quite active early in my 20s as well. And again, you know, I was, you know, partaking in alcohol and recreational drugs, trying to, in my point of view, if I could get to the point where I could just pass out, that maybe I would sleep so deeply that I wouldn't have an instance. I wouldn't have a quote unquote nightmare when they really weren't nightmares, you know, that I could get so far down into sleep, into that REM sleep, that there would be a chance that it wouldn't happen. And it would work to a degree.
So at what point did you kind of start to awaken to the idea that your dreams could be more than just what I would call brain dumps? Because I know sometimes I have dreams that mean something and you can tell the difference. But most of the time, my dreams are brain dumps, just the random stuff from the last few days show up in weird ways. And it's like, this is the most bizarre, you know, they're never nightmares. They're just bizarre strings of things happening, you know.
Well, to answer that question, it was rather late in life. I was enmeshed in a 13-year relationship with my last husband, and unbeknownst to me, I had signed a soul contract with him prior to incarnating. And until that contract was complete, the full awakening was not going to happen. The time traveling was still going to happen because that's an ability that I brought into this incarnation with me. So it's something that I was doing, and in my blueprint, in my plans to incarnate again, the agreement was I'm going to bring it with me and I'm going to do it at night. So the way that it's been explained to me by my guides is to view it as two missions. So I have one mission that I do at night, and then I have the missions that I do during the day or as Melina.
And what is the mission that you do during the day?
The mission that I do during the day is I transmute negative energy. And so that could be anything from somebody walks up to me, near me, and there's some kind of situation going on with them, I'll feel that absorption that I explained, like when I was in high school, mm-hmm. I'll feel that absorption. And what I didn't know then that I do know now is that I can transmute it. And so I either send it up to the universe to be taken care of there. So it's kind of like taking a handful of their negative energy out of their aura, and I can send it up, or I can transmute it into the ground, whichever way I choose. The daytime gifts are kind of, you know, a lot. You know, I can see people's little pieces of their blueprint, help them with soul path advising, do readings. It's just several different gifts, but the primary one, the purpose for me incarnating will be the energy that I will bring to the planet once they've calibrated my body to the point that I'm able to hold energy to that degree.
And when you say they've calibrated, who is they?
They are my guides, okay. My guides. So they've been working on me a little bit my whole life. But obviously over the past 2 years, that's the volume's been turned up on that. So I can feel calibrations regularly on a physical level. I can also hear them. I can hear when they're coming in. There's a certain frequency that will reverberate through my ears.
So is it like a ringing or a hum or buzzing? What does it sound like?
They're different every time.
Okay.
They're different every time. So sometimes it'll sound like a little zap, like zzz, it'll sound like that. Other times it'll sound almost like a tuning fork hitting the side of a glass. And then recently, I had one just as short as a week ago, and this was the first time this happened. So it was around 5 o'clock in the morning, and I woke up of my own accord, not having a time traveling experience, nothing like that. I just woke up, and I said to myself, it's about to happen. And as soon as I got those words out of my mouth, I heard the ring, and then I felt a wave start about probably my cheekbones and went all the way coursing through my entire abdomen. And I knew that's why, because I'm being upgraded all the time, now I can tell when it's coming.
That makes sense. It seems like if it's a regular thing, you would start to get used to it. Yeah. When it first started happening, did it kind of freak you out?
Oh yeah, it sure did. The very first time it happened, it was around 6 or 7 o'clock in the morning. I was still living on the Gulf Coast in Texas, and I heard just this really sharp frequency start in my right ear and went through and came out my left ear. And it was just very, very fast, but very, very high octave, very, very high frequency. And I knew that something had happened. I just knew, I could feel it. And of course, I called my mentor within a couple of days and was like, what's going on? Why am I hearing these frequencies? And she said, they've started upgrading your body.
And you do talk about your mentor a lot in the book. And I'm just curious, has she ever met anybody like you before?
I think that she's given readings to other starseeds, but what I've heard her say on a couple of occasions is that the things that you're here for, and then she'll get quiet. Like, because we've talked a little bit about some of my family members also being starseeds, but they're here for other reasons. One of which is just simply to witness the ascension. And then her very next comment was, but what you're here for is completely different. So I think that some of the thing, and she's told me that too, as I read you, I'm learning more. Because yes, it is kind of a unique situation.
Okay, so you've mentioned time traveling, and I dare say most of my listeners have not read your book yet. So could you just do, without going into too much detail, because I do want them to read your book, could you explain the time traveling just a little bit? Is that what you're doing at night?
Yes, yes. And I do not do it every night. I would be way too exhausted to have a day life as Melina doing it nightly. So the way that it happens is it will happen, maybe I'll have one and then I'll have another one 4 nights later, and then maybe even a third one, and then I'll get 3 or 4 weeks off. And basically what happens is I am in the middle of sleeping, dead asleep, and then I'll start seeing, you know, that I'm going somewhere. And I land into a timeline, which has been previously agreed upon, or they, or my guides have picked it out and I'm just sent. So it's a combination of the two. And then once I realize that I've descended into a timeline and I start seeing myself talking either with my guides or with the people that I'm encountering in the timeline scene, then I'll start to wake up to a certain point. But I know how to, I know, first of all, don't open my eyes, because I open my eyes, then it's going to pull me out of the theta state. And that's where I need to remain in order to complete what I'm there to do. So I just kind of raise up a little bit in my awareness and complete whatever task I've been put in that timeline to do.
So does this feel like kind of a combination of lucid dreaming and astral projection to you?
I would say that it's 100% I'm out of my body. I can even at times, you know, check in on my body and see that I'm still nice and tucked in my bed, but myself, my essence, my soul is gone. She's out. She's traveling up and down the timelines, and she's going to see where she's needed that night.
That's very cool. I've heard so many people talk about trying to astral project. Like people study this and they attempt it and they try to put themselves in the right state of mind, and you just do it naturally, and you've done it naturally your entire life because you're put here for the purpose of doing it, which is, it's kind of amazing. So for those people who are listening, who feel like somehow they are being called to do something similar, do you have any advice for them?
Oh, sure. I would say, if you feel that you're being called to do something similar, to start paying attention to the dreams that you are having, and keep a notepad and a pen next to your bed and quickly write down just whatever it is that you can remember, and then start going back and looking at what's happening there. You know, is there a story that's unfolding, or is it, you know, quote unquote, a regular dream? I have those too, you know, where my subconscious is trying to work things out that I'm experiencing in my daily life as well. Mm-hmm. But if they're feeling a calling to that, I would definitely practice holding themselves in the theta state, which one common way is through meditation. You know, so if you can practice through meditation, also when you're going down at night, you know, that little last 5-10 minutes before you're really off to sleep, pay attention to what you're seeing then too. I do that every night on my way down. I'm, you know, looking at all the images that are floating through my brain, seeing if there's anything I need to make out of that. And if there's not, then I go ahead and let myself go to sleep. And same thing waking up, you know, don't just pop out of bed. take a minute, lay there with your eyes closed, kind of doze off a little bit and see if there's any messages from your guides and any guidance as to how to proceed. Practice makes perfect.
Yeah, definitely do not give up if you feel like this is something you've been called to do. So in the book, there was one story that jumped out at me a bit. I mean, they were all interesting, but this one in particular jumped out at me. And you basically go into a timeline and a man is having a heart attack or something along those lines, a medical emergency. Mm-hmm. And if I'm remembering it correctly, you take the form of his wife.
Yes.
Can you say what happens after that?
Sure. Basically, what happened in that time travel was there was a gentleman that kind of started at the end and then they flipped the time back a little bit. So when it started, I was already covering him up with a blanket and the EMS had already been there. So they showed me that, or I showed myself that I was there, and then the knob goes back. And so then I see myself walking up a hallway and I see him opening up the refrigerator door, and I can tell that there's something wrong. He's sweating. He looks flushed. There's something happening, and it turns out to be a heart attack. And I ask him, "Are you okay?" And I can feel the feeling of his wife within my own energy. And so the way that I try to describe it is like almost like I pulled, or I have a piece of her within my own energy. Even though she's not there, I still have a piece of her with me. I'm able to relate to the feeling of wife. Mm-hmm. And so I appear, when he's looking at me, that's what I look like. I look like his wife, but I'm not. And then I see that he's having a heart attack and call the EMS to come and help him. This is someone who needs to stay alive. There was a purpose behind it.
Yeah. And the reason that this jumps out at me as being very different from the other stories in the book is because over the years, as I've collected stories and I've read tons of books on the paranormal, and one recurring theme is, and even a few people I've talked to in person, they've had a medical emergency and they went unconscious. And yet later a doctor in a hospital says it's a good thing you called 911 when you did. And they never called 911, and there was nobody there to call 911. And so what this story in particular sounds like to me is an example of how somebody like you could come in and save that person, which I think is a great reason to call yourself an earth angel. I mean, so it just kind of blew my mind when I read it. It didn't sink in as much as when I came to your book signing last week and I was listening to everybody ask you questions and you talk about it. And it was like, bam, wait a minute. This could totally explain that particular part of the paranormal experience.
Yes. You just summed it up so nicely right there. That's called angel work. That's what that is. Angel work.
That's a beautiful thing for sure.
I love that it's expanding our conceptions of what an angel looks like. You know, because I think over, you know, the history of mankind, we've put angels so far up there that they're almost in a way inaccessible to us and to humankind. And it's just expanding our vision of what angels do you know, you've got archangels, of course, but then you've got a whole army of other angels that are able to help in that manner.
Yes, absolutely. So what are some of the things that you have experienced in your nighttime work that surprised you? Some of the things that you've realized that you can do that just totally shocked you?
I would have to say, and this will be coming in book two, so I'll give a little bit of that away. I'm able to telepathically kind of get people to do what I need them to do at the time, as long as it stays in alignment with source. Mm-hmm. What it reminds me of, I'm just going to go out on a limb here. What it reminds me of is Obi-Wan Kenobi, when he pulls up with Luke Skywalker and he says, "These are not the droids that you are looking for."
Right.
And he kind of does his little hand, and, you know, his fingers go in the wave, and then it's not the droids they're looking for, and they walk off, right?
Right.
It's like that. I've seen myself do that in a time travel. That will be coming up in book two, where I'm able to quiet an animal that is giving away my position. And then this another thing, it's also in the same chapter, I'm able to teleport. So I have a victim that I'm having trouble getting them out away from the two gentlemen that, well, gentlemen, the two bad guys that are pursuing us. And so with the lack of better means, I simply put my arm up in the air, point my finger, and whew, we go straight up out of the timeline.
I'm not going to ask. I'm going to leave it.
You have to read the book if you want to know where I went.
Yeah. That was my question, but I'm not going to ask.
Yeah, that was two gifts. These are all grand trines is what they're called. They're gifts from God that I've accumulated over billions of years that I've existed. You know, my soul is old soul. I tried to explain that a little bit during the book signing that, you know, I've been around since before Earth was a planet. So my soul is very, very old. And so through my lifetimes in the Orion constellation and in the Pleiades constellation, and then lifetimes that I've had here on Earth, I've accumulated these gifts. And according to my last reading with my mentor, I had a vision of my own Akashic records. I can get into my own Akashic records. And they were showing me all the gifts that I have. And the very last sentence was, "These are all grand trines." And so I had a follow-up phone call with my mentor, and I said, "Well, what is this?" And she said, "It's exactly what they said, that you can't put yourself in a box, that your grand trines are the energy and the time travel. Your grand trines are all of the things that you do and that you've accumulated over the existence of my soul."
That is pretty amazing. So we've already mentioned that you have a second book coming out. Mm-hmm. And you have a first book that I will put a link to. It's an Amazon link. And there are probably some people listening who are going to want to talk to you. So how could people get in touch with you if they want to speak with you?
Well, they can email me. I have an email address that's soulpathsolutions@gmail.com. And then we'll put a few links, I suppose, at the end of the podcast that they can make appointments with me. One would be on Mondays through a website that I have, and the second one would be for readings on Tuesdays through Quantum Life Store, where I work.
And that's in Cary, North Carolina.
Yes.
And I have been there. That's where I went to, that's where I first met you and where I went to your book signing. And it is, that is a wonderful store. I could stand in there for an hour and not see everything that is in the store. So, so if you are in the Raleigh, Durham, Chapel Hill, Cary area, and you go by Quantum Life, do not judge it by the outside because it looks small from the outside, but there is so much packed in the store. It's just amazing to me.
Yes. The owner just did a outstanding job ordering merchandise to assist with spiritual journeys.
Yep. And I spoke with her. She's a very, very nice woman. And I am so happy and thankful that I was able to meet you and her and learn more about your journey and your purpose and just really learn about this amazing story that you have to share.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And I am going to put the links in the show notes. So listeners, if you are interested in getting in touch with Melina, just tap on any one of those links and there will also be a link to her Amazon page as well. So Melina, thank you so much for being a part of the podcast.
Thank you so much, Nicole. It was a pleasure.
Yep. Pleasure was all mine.
Thanks again to Melina for joining me, and thank you for listening. If you have an idea for a show topic or you'd like to share your own personal, paranormal, or spiritual experiences on the show, please use the contact form at peeppodcast.com to reach out to me. That's P-E-E-P podcast.com. Remember, that stands for People Experiencing Everyday Paranormal. If you enjoy the podcast, please give it some rating love on your favorite podcast app, share it with friends, and subscribe so you don't miss an episode. Doing so will help the podcast be found by others. Special thanks to everyone who has given the show some love. I really appreciate it. You can keep up with the show on its Facebook page, facebook.com/peeppodcast. We have a group linked from that page in case you're interested in joining the conversation. One thing to note about the group is that I only approve members who answer the questions. And unfortunately, Facebook doesn't keep a list of people who'd be interested in being on the show. So if you said yes to that question, please get in touch through the website. The Peep Podcast is free to enjoy, but it's not free for me to create. So like many other independent podcasters, I happily accept donations. If you're interested in supporting the show financially, you can join me on patreon.com/NicoleMorock, where I am eagerly awaiting my first patrons. All donations will be received with humble gratitude. No matter how you support the show, listening, telling others about it, financial assistance, or any other way, I absolutely appreciate your being here. Thanks again for listening. Stay safe and be well.